Today, we'll be talking about Howling Bigfoot, strange disappearances in the forest, fey folklore, and much more. All coming up on this edition of From the Forest. Thank you for joining me and welcome. I am your host, Nick Ryan. I hope everyone's had a great week, and before we start today's episode, I'd like to thank Julie for their support and generosity. And if you enjoy the show, please consider following, sharing, and reviewing the podcast. This supports us by helping new listeners to discover the show. You can also support us at patreon.com/paranormalmysteries or at buymeacoffee.com/paranormal. And if you'd like to share your paranormal encounter on the podcast, you can submit your story through email at paranormalmysteriespodcast@gmail.com, through voice message at speakpipe.com/paranormalmysteries, or on our website at paranormalmysteriespodcast.com. And all of these links can be found in the show notes. For some time, I've been wanting to add a new series to the show that focuses on the bizarre experiences that people have had within the wilderness. And I'm calling it From the Forest. This series will include stories of cryptids, fey folk, missing people, and those who believe that they were almost taken, just to name a few. So if an experience occurs in or around the woods, you'll find it on From the Forest. And if you have a story that you think would be a good fit for the series, contact me as usual and be sure to put From the Forest or FTF in the subject or title. And with that in mind, tonight's first encounter comes to us from Zachary, and Zachary's story is called The Howl in the Night. Zachary says, "Hello, Nick. I've been listening to your podcast for some time now and decided to start sharing some of my stories. As many have said time and time again in their stories, thank you for creating this space where we can share our stories. Whether we share them because no one else believes us, or because we love sharing them with anybody, especially those who believe. Many thanks to you for allowing us to share them. It's people like you and forums like this that continue to prove that reality is often far stranger and more mysterious than fiction. This is going to be a long tale, yet it's only one of many experiences that I've had. But this one, however, gives me the chills to this day. For as long as I can remember, I've always believed in the supernatural, unexplained, cryptids, and had an interest in metaphysics, history, esotericism, and the occult. However, one subject within these interests really grabbed a hold of me at a young age, that being Sasquatch, Bigfoot, the Yeti, Skunk Ape, Yowie, or whatever name you'd like to attribute to it. I was a fan of watching TV shows such as Finding Bigfoot and Destination Truth, even if I knew that they were most likely bogus shows. I never believed in all the crackpot theories about Sasquatch being some interdimensional scouts, but I never tried to talk about those theories like they couldn't be true. I always believed that, like the mountain ape, Sasquatch was just another ape that has yet to be documented or studied, likely a more human ape than we've ever encountered. As a side note, many people try to discount that line of thought in Sasquatch theories by asking the question about where the bones are. Yet they forget that bare bones and other bones of big animals tend to not always be found. I've never really had the chance to explore the woods or forests on a Bigfoot hunt, so I just kept my interests in the cryptid to myself. Over 10 years ago, my grandparents moved from Southern California to Northern Idaho, very close to the border of Canada. And it was then that I realized that I might finally have an opportunity to finally hunt for Bigfoot. When we pulled up to my grandparents' new house after the 2-day drive, I became so ecstatic that I thought I was going to burst. The first thing I noticed when we arrived was how far away from any big cities they were, and how thick the forest around them was. I figured that if Sasquatch was going to make an appearance, it would be near a house like this one. My grandparents bred dogs, and many of the dogs were show dogs, so seeing the kennel nearby worried me that the dogs would likely scare off most wildlife, though I later remembered reports of Sasquatch not being fazed by barking dogs. I employed many of the things that I had seen on those Finding Bigfoot and Destination Truth type shows, such as making sure I put stuff near my grandparents' trap cameras and hiding peanut butter nearby. I even got my younger cousins excited to hunt for Bigfoot, and we searched my grandparents' property every time we went there. Nothing super crazy or intriguing happened, save for the peanut butter always being totally ravaged and the disappearance of an obscene amount of trap camera photos. But then, in 2012, my family decided to do Christmas in Idaho during a really thick snow season. After 2 days, we made it to my grandparents' house and settled in. Christmas Eve and Christmas Day were wonderful. We had plenty of fun and there wasn't a lack of joy or laughter. On the night of Christmas Day, my mom and I carefully trekked through the thick snowfall to get to the RV where we were staying. There was a sizable distance between the front porch and the giant sheet metal barn that was built to cover the RV. We finally made it inside the RV, and I decided to begin watching an episode of the original Doctor Who, which I had just gotten as a gift. These following things should be noted. The sheet metal barn was by no means thick, and we could easily hear wolves off in the distance, or the dogs in the kennel barking. The TV was not that loud, and at times it was so quiet that I could still hear the snow falling and slowly sliding off the top of the barn over the TV volume. Everybody else was inside the house, and none of them knew enough about Sasquatch to mess with me. And even if no one believes me, I felt that what happened next was beyond anything I've heard or will ever hear. Laying there silently, my mom and I watched the TV, and then it began. First, we heard a wolf pack off in the distance making a sound I was already spooked by, because I had never heard that level of distress from wolves before. The calls they made sounded very frightened, and they zoomed past the back of the sheet metal barn, and one of them banged into the side of the barn, causing a lot of snow to slide off, and by this time, I had already muted the TV. Then, the dogs in the kennel right next to the house, which was even further away from the barn, began barking, some in an aggressive manner, and some in a scared manner. They grew louder and louder until eventually they shut themselves up, and everything went eerily quiet and still, and even the snow seemed to be falling softer. Then, either close by or a ways off, from far behind my grandparents' house and aimed in the direction where the wolves ran, which was the same direction we were in, we heard it. A howl in the night, very loud, very long, and almost like a siren, but more of a vocalization meant to terrify and raise the hairs on your skin. A stopwatch that I had going a few seconds into the howl showed that it lasted for roughly 1 minute and 46 seconds, a time that seemed to last an eternity. Still very frozen, my mom and I looked at each other, and she asked, "Was that?" And I stared at her and said, "Yes, yes that was." She had never heard Bigfoot before, and I had never described what it was supposed to sound like to her, and even I had only heard descriptions, but not imitations. So my bones, my soul, and every fiber of my being told me that what we had heard was the howl of a Sasquatch. For the better portion of the following day, my family played videos of indigenous animals, highlighting certain calls and howls to try and convince us that it wasn't Bigfoot. But my mom and I came to the definitive conclusion that it could have only been Bigfoot. I even searched around the property for tracks, only feeling like I shouldn't have been outside alone. If we had any doubts about what had happened, going to the back of the barn dispelled all doubts. In the back where the wolves had ran past, I saw a mess of snow and most notably a slight dent in the back side of the barn, proving that we hadn't dreamt any of it. I rarely told this story since I was young, because other kids at school would have been prone to make fun of me. But further confirmation came when watching people speak of their encounters, and a few of the imitations lined up very well with what my mom and I heard. Various Sasquatch vocalization videos online chill me to the bone, because even though they could very well be fake, many of the howls are beyond spot on. Eventually, my mom and I actually saw something in 2015 when we left Big Sur after camping there for a few days. In some bushes by the side of the road heading out of our campsite, we noticed glowing eyes towards the bottom of the road and thought that a raccoon was waiting in the bushes. Then, just as my dad turned on the headlights, my mom and I caught the form of something really tall that stood up and walked backwards into the tall bushes. The most that my mother and I saw in the light was its torso, but we noticed the bright red eyes and the fact that it was taller than the light from the headlights. But sadly, no one else saw it. I began telling a few high school friends this story that I've just told you for the first time, and I told the full story for pretty much the first time very recently. I was a groomsman for one of my good friends whose wedding was at the end of May, and I decided to tell the full story to him and the rest of the groomsmen. When I got to the part with the howl, I took a deep breath and proceeded to try and imitate the howl as I was looking over the desert hills and mountains of Southern California. And the look on their faces when I turned around said it all. They looked nearly exactly as I had felt when I'd heard the real thing. I stared at them and told them, "Now imagine that, but 1,000 times more petrifying." Seeing their faces and hearing myself make the call into the valley sprawling out in front of me took me right back to that winter trip many years ago in the snowy forests of northern Idaho when my mother and I heard the howl in the night. This next story that I'd like to share with you comes from Mysterious Universe, featuring a Reddit user by the name of Clavin, who says this happened when he was 10 or 11 years old out at Big Bear Lake in California. At the time, he had been visiting his grandparents who lived in a cabin at the lake, and it was a place he says he went several times a year. He explains that the surrounding forest had always been unsettling to him, with the constant feeling of someone or something watching him from the trees. Nevertheless, he often went hiking out there with his dad and uncle, and on this day they were on a trail they had hiked countless times before. They all knew the area extremely well, and yet something odd was about to happen. And this is what he had to say. "Me, my dad, and my uncle were out on a trail that we've been on hundreds of times before, when we reached the peak of the first hill that we usually like to stop and look out at the view from. My dad and uncle wanted to keep hiking for a bit, but I decided to go back to the cabin on my own, as it was only 5 to 10 minutes away. I headed down the usual path that I go on, not thinking too much about it, when I realized that I have no idea where I am. Everything looked the same as usual, but something was wrong. The normal path was different in a way that I can't really explain. It seemed to be 10 times as long as usual. Everything was silent, and there was absolutely no wildlife around me, not even a squirrel. I kept having all these morbid thoughts coming into my head about how I was lost forever, or how some sort of creature was going to swoop me up. Every 10 minutes or so, I'd end up at a part of the trail that I definitely recognized, only to be in a completely alien area moments later. The path kept winding and winding downhill, and the sun was setting pretty rapidly. I had to have been walking in the direction of the cabin for more than an hour because I remember I kept checking my watch and panicking, and at this point I just accepted that I was lost. I finally made it down to the street and was relieved to be able to orient myself, but it was only one street away from the cabin, although I should have been much farther away. I was expecting my father and my uncle to be home by now and for my parents to be worried about me for being gone for so long, but instead my mom asked why I came back so soon. I asked my dad how long they were out as well, and they said they only walked maybe 15 minutes longer after I left them. Another Reddit user by the name of RavenMaster1331 says that she had gone camping with her husband to a place she calls Deep Creek Campgrounds, and one day as they were exploring the area, they came to a secluded road and tunnel. They entered the tunnel planning to simply walk through to the other side, but a series of strange events would make that quite difficult. And she says this. "So we go through the tunnel, and this is where it all gets a bit weird. What should have been maybe a 10-minute walk turned into a 30-minute walk. We're not really panicking, but we're still not out of this damn tunnel. We're filming and realizing the timestamp on the camera keeps changing. The phone is fairly useless but keeps showing weird times, notifications, etc. Finally, we reach the end, and I decide that there's no way that I'm going back through the tunnel. And here was our second mistake. There's a trail going across the tunnel, so my husband wants to go back through and then meet us while I and our daughter go over the top to wait. At the top, the trail ends, which is unusual, but not a big deal as I can see the trail that we came up, and my husband will be coming up shortly. So I take some pictures, full panoramas and everything, and I'm never out of sight of the trail. My husband then shows up, and we start looking around for the next trail, or any trail, never going more than 150 feet in any direction solo, while one of us stands near the trail. We decide we can't find it, and that we'll just head back down the trail we came. But now, that trail is not where it was. But that's okay, because I took some pictures of some unusual trees and things, so I'll just use them as a marker. I open up the pictures, and all of them are timestamped wrong, and the images are different. The entire skyline 100 feet away, mountains, etc., is completely different, and now we start to get worried. We look for nearly 3 hours for how to get down and how to find the trail back, but nothing. Finally, we realize that we're fairly screwed and start planning what we're going to do, at which point the glitchy phone gets a phone call and we realize that it works. We then call 911, who puts us through to a ranger rescue team. They find us maybe an hour later, mere feet from a trail and 1 entire mile from the tunnel. At this point, we go on our merry way and decide that we will never hike again. Another poster named Lazuli369 from Eastern Texas says that when he was 15 years old, he liked to walk in the woods around his home and had never seen anything particularly strange out there until one day when he took a short walk through an area he had been through many times before. But on this day, he would stumble across a very odd place nestled out among the trees that he had never seen before on all of his previous hikes. And he had this to say. This time, though, I decided to go a little bit farther than I usually did, and my house had just left my line of sight when I found something odd. That something was an area of forest in which absolutely nothing was growing. There weren't any trees, moss, mushrooms, or anything. This area happened to be in the shape of a large oval, and I couldn't see any imperfections in its shape, and there weren't any signs that it was man-made either. So naturally, I sort of stood there and marveled at the strange plot of land. And shortly after, things started to get a little weirder. I started hearing some unnatural noise, and it sounded like it was coming from everywhere and nowhere all at the same time. I could hear it right in my ears and from the forest around me, and it was getting louder. It took me a minute to identify the sound. It was a group of women harmonizing. At least that's what it sounded like to me. Now by this point, I was honestly a little excited. Whatever was happening was obviously not a natural occurrence. I wanted to stay and observe, but I guess whatever or whoever was there was telling me to leave. The harmonizing soon filled my ears and was beginning to be painfully loud. In spite of this, I stayed adamant in my staying. Then came easily the weirdest part. I just bolted back in the direction of my house without warning. I tore through briars and mud, not even trying to slip past them, until I found myself in my backyard again. As I stood there covered in scrapes, mud, and trickling with blood, I realized that I wasn't the one that was moving my body. It was almost like I was in complete autopilot. I knew very well what I was doing, but I wasn't the one telling my body to do it. I don't know, it's difficult to describe. Being my hard-headed self, I actually tried to find that spot again, even though I was legitimately scared by that happening. But no matter how long I traipsed through those woods, I never found that place again. Another story I found interesting comes from the American Anthology Annual Report of 1898. The report tells a story of a 10-year-old boy known only as Wofford, who claimed to have been out practicing archery near a river when he was distracted by thoughts of catching fish and went to the riverside to attempt to make a fish trap out of stones. He reported that as he was at work piling up the stones in the water to make the walls that would trap the fish, a stranger emerged from the woods and told him that he looked tired and that he should take a break. The stranger invited the boy back to his nearby home for dinner, and since he looked like a normal, amiable person in every respect, Wofford went along with him without too much suspicion. When the boy arrived at the home, it was found to be a warm place full of laughter and welcoming friendly people who made him feel completely at home, and a family friend of his apparently also showed up, which melted away any remaining reservations that Wofford might have had about being there. The boy ate dinner there, played with the family's children, and seemed to have had a most entertaining time before falling asleep at the house. In the morning, he told them that his family was probably worried and that he should get back home, and the same stranger who invited him took him out along a path which reportedly had an orchard on one side and a cornfield on the other. The stranger took him to a junction in the path and pointed along another trail that meandered off into the wilds, explaining to Wofford that it would take him towards the river, over a ridge, and straight home. The boy followed the instructions, but when he turned around to wave goodbye to the stranger, he saw that not only was he gone, but also that the cornfield and the orchard that had just been there were nowhere to be seen. Indeed, there was no trail at all. He found himself surrounded by nothing but thick trees and wilderness all around him, and he had no idea where he was. Luckily, as he made his way through the underbrush, he managed to chance upon a group of people who had been out frantically searching for him, including the family friend who he had apparently seen at the stranger's house. When Wofford asked the friend where the house was and what had happened to the trail, the friend explained that he had never been to such a house and had been out searching for the missing boy the whole time. And he would later be told by the locals that there was no house at all where he had claimed it to have been. The superstitious locals, upon hearing the story, suggested that he had probably come across the shape-shifting Nunahi, meaning the people who live anywhere, which are supposedly a race of supernatural creatures from Cherokee mythology. Even stranger is a case related by David Politis, this time in a Coast to Coast AM interview with George Knapp. In this weird account, a 3-year-old boy known only as John Doe went missing on October 1st of 2010 at around 6:30 p.m. along a very popular fly fishing river near Mount Shasta in California. Shortly after his reported disappearance, authorities conducted a search of the area and found the boy 5 hours later, just sitting in a stand of trees and seemingly dazed and confused, and he would later come forth with quite the odd story to tell. According to the boy, he had been taken into a cave deep within the mountain by a woman who he had thought was his grandmother. Once they had reached their destination, the boy claimed that he had found himself in a cold, dark room full of human-looking robots that sat or stood around in various positions, apparently motionless, as well as some form of guns or weapons scattered about accruing dust, not to mention giant spiders skittering about the gloom. It was then that the boy allegedly realized that there was a strange light emanating from his grandmother's head, and that she too was some sort of robot. This grandmother apparently ordered him to defecate upon a sheet of paper and then got agitated when he refused. The grandmother also told him that he was from outer space and he had been planted in his mother's womb. The boy was then taken back outside and was told to wait in a thicket until he was found. When the whole incredibly bizarre tale came to light, the boy's grandmother confessed that a year before the incident, she had been camping in the same area and had been inexplicably pulled from her tent and deposited a short distance away. When she had woken up, she claimed to have felt a pain in the base of her neck and had discovered 2 puncture marks surrounded by red skin. The grandmother had no idea if this had anything to do with the boy's far-out tale, but it does seem rather odd. Politis has claimed that this is one of the more bizarre experiences he has come across, and the whole tale seems rather absurd if not for the fact that everyone involved has continued to maintain that it is true. The last article I'd like to share with you tonight involves folklore, especially that of the stray sod. This is usually described as a patch of grass imbued with magical properties commonly attributed to fairies, also known as the fae. According to the lore, if one is to step upon this enchanted grass, they will become disoriented and lose their way, no matter how familiar they are with the area. The book Ancient Legends of Ireland by Lady Wilde gives a rather dramatic description of the stray sod, saying this: "There is an herb or fairy grass called Fod Chagrin, or the stray sod, and whoever treads the path it grows on is compelled by an irresistible impulse to travel on without stopping, all through the night, delirious and restless, over bog and mountain, through hedges and ditches, till wearied and bruised and cut, his garments torn, his hands bleeding, he finds himself in the morning 20 or 30 miles perhaps from his own home. And those who fall under this strange influence have all the time the sensation of flying, and are utterly unable to pause or turn back, or change their career. There is, however, another herb that can neutralize the effects of the Fod Chagrin, but only the initiated can utilize its mystic properties." Another author who wrote quite a bit about supposed cases of this was a minister by the name of McManus, who wrote several books on fairies in Ireland, including Irish Earth Folk in 1960 and The Middle Kingdom, The Fairy World of Ireland in 1959. His work includes several supposedly true stories of the stray sod phenomenon at work, with one of them being the tale of a reverend named Mr. Harris. In the summer of 1916, Reverend Harris allegedly went on a trip to go tend to a very sick woman who lived not far away. It was only a 7-mile walk, which he had taken many times before, so he told his wife he would be back within 2 hours, and he headed off. At some point, the reverend went through a gate and decided to cut across the field beyond as a shortcut, where he expected to find a small staircase over the fence on the other side, called a stile, where the path would continue. He had taken this shortcut on many occasions before, so it was with some surprise that he reached the other side of the field and found no sign of either of these. In fact, he could not even see any evidence of the path anymore. He at first thought that he might have made a mistake and gone to the wrong spot, so he followed the hedge around the field and did a full circle without finding the stile. And even stranger was that there was no sign of the gate that he had entered through, and the path he had taken was nowhere to be seen. He searched the field for hours without any sign of the gate, the path, or the stairway. Indeed, there was no way out of this field at all. The panic was growing within him with every passing moment, until at one point, things suddenly just returned to normal, just as quickly as they had derailed. The path and the gate appeared again, and he found himself standing right next to the stairway that he had been searching for the entire time. Does the story of the stray sod explain some of these strange and temporary disappearances that people are experiencing? Or is it simply just folklore and legend? You be the judge. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's edition of From the Forest, and I'd like to give a special thank you to Zachary for sharing their experience. And if you've had a paranormal encounter, I would like to share your story. You can contact me through email, voice message, or on our website, and all of these links can be found in the show notes. From all of us at Paranormal Mysteries, thank you for listening, and please remember, don't wait for the unknown to come to you. Get out there and find it.